Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, as always, sitting alongside my colleague Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, final show of the week. Packers-Vikings is almost upon us. It's a noon Central Time kickoff Sunday at U.S. Bank Stadium. And let me start by saying I'm really excited that we finally have a noon kickoff.
Yeah.
Because from a work standpoint, it's you get out of bed Sunday morning, you go to the stadium, you get your work done, and with us flying on the team charter, I plan to be home actually before my daughter goes to bed. So that's always a nice thing.
It's always the best thing, Mike. And as Jordy Nelson said, I mean, the one way it could be better is when you go to Detroit, because you lose the hour going there, but you get an extra hour to sleep in. The game's first at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then you come back and it's only like 5 o'clock in Green Bay. Minnesota's probably the second best situation, though, because you do get there. We finally have a noon game after such a long start here to the season. And now for the Green Bay Packers, an easy trip back. And fortunately for them, now going into this bye week in a couple weeks, actually doesn't really have to get jet lagged that much.
Yeah, definitely not. As we look at this one, as we always do our final show of the week, we talk about the keys to victory and how we see this thing shaping up. And I don't mean to repeat everything that I said on yesterday's show, but for me, offensively for Green Bay in this one, the number one priority in my mind is to protect Aaron Rodgers, because yeah, I think if you can protect the quarterback, that also lends itself to protecting the football from the strip sacks and the potential turnovers and the throws under pressure. Rodgers had, you know, maybe one of his worst games that I can remember in terms of ball security last year in week two in that first game at U.S. Bank Stadium. That was the outlier as far as his career. You don't want to repeat that going back into that building, and I think it starts with the protection up front.
Yeah, you're right, Mike. It does. And it was interesting listening to James Campen talk to the media on Thursday during assistant coach's availability, because you know, James, he's a very prideful guy, and he does not wear his emotions on his sleeve a lot. When he does, you know, it means something. And you could really see how proud he is of that group, the way they've been able to persevere through this. It was even brought up to him that they've had five different starting offensive line combinations, you know, throughout the course of the season. They're actually, it's funny, if David Bakhtiari doesn't play in this game, this could be the first time where they actually go consecutive weeks with the same starting
with the same
five
group. Yeah, yeah.
You don't want that to be. You want there to be a six different option now if Bakhtiari is able to get back in there. But these guys have learned to kind of really, you know, deal with what they have and make the best adjustments with it. Lane Taylor has been a great example of that, moving out to left tackle. You have Justin McCray has made starts now at right tackle, at left guard. He's played center during the preseason. They've really had to stress the versatility and flexibility of that group.
Yep.
And to this point, they've been able to hold up to it. A different challenge this week, though, with Everson Griffith and everybody that we talked about on Vikings side of the ball. But up until this point, the fact that Aaron Rodgers has been able to be as effective as he has been, it's been a credit to that offensive line keeping him clean.
Yeah, you mentioned Everson Griffin. He's got a sack in every game so far this season. He leads the Vikings with six. Danell Hunter, another pass rusher on the other side, very effective, very explosive guy. With regards to the Packers' running game, I think that's another aspect of this that helps to protect the quarterback. A quarterback's best friend, aside from his five guys up front, is a good running game. With Ty Montgomery now, he practiced on Thursday with the flak jacket protecting the ribs, you know, underneath his jersey and everything. We saw obviously what Aaron Jones has done the last game and a half in filling in for Montgomery. How do you see this shaping up right now with the Packers running game coming into this Vikings game? Sort of what's your speculation on it?
You know, it's very interesting. It's so hard to see the short term because it really comes down to the doctors, you know. Montgomery even talked about it as locker on Thursday. I mean, it was a medical decision to hold him out against the Cowboys, and I think it was the right decision because you don't want to mess around with broken ribs. At the same time, you don't really know the severity of it or what he's exactly dealing with or the pain tolerance or what the probability is of there being an aggravation. So ultimately, that decision is going to be up to the training staff and the doctors in Montgomery to see how he feels. He said he felt comfortable being a full participant in Thursday's padded practice. Long term, I think this is great for the Packers now, because when you look historically when they've been most effective offensively, it's when they've had more than one option in the backfield. Even last year, to some extent, having the Thunder and Lightning combination of Montgomery and Aaron Ripkowski, when you can go with different personnel at different times, everybody knew from the beginning you don't want Ty Montgomery playing 1,000 or 1,100 snaps or whatever it was working out to be. You need to have a competent number two. You need to have somebody that complements him, and it looks like Aaron Jones right now could be that guy.
Yeah, I definitely think so, and I like the fact that the Packers now, as we're heading into, I guess you'd say, the meat of the season in terms of these middle months before you really get to that stretch run from Thanksgiving and beyond, they're developing options in the backfield. You're giving yourself some choices depending on what happens with injuries, depending on what happens with performance. And I agree with you, Wes. I think that's something that could go a long way for this offense.
And as I've said since the beginning, probably the point of nauseam for some of the listeners, this is why you draft guys. And it's because you know their best years are ahead of them, their best runs are ahead of them. And Aaron Jones is showing you exactly why the Packers were so high on him coming out of UTEP and why they felt the skills that he developed there were going to translate to the NFL. The kid has it.
Yeah, plenty of youth in the Packers backfield, no question about that. With that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford right here. Wes Hodkowitz over there. Wes, shifting gears to the defensive side of the ball and the keys to victory here for the Packers against the Vikings. We talked yesterday, obviously, about how important it would be to get an interception, get one of these Minnesota quarterbacks. I think it's going to be Case Keenum, but whether it's Sam Bradford or Keenum, to throw his first interception of the season. The Vikings haven't done that yet this year. But aside from that, you look at Minnesota's offensive weapons. You have Jerick McKinnon, Latavius Murray in the backfield. You've got Kyle Rudolph at tight end, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen at wide receiver. Who's the first guy you're putting the target on if you're going into this game trying to take somebody away as far as the Packers' defense is concerned?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike. I think it is Thielen, which is interesting. I mean, he's taken such an interesting route to the NFL. When you talk about an undrafted player, completely unheralded, you know, comes through that Minnesota feeder system. I know there's been a lot made out of the Vikings really developing a lot of their in-state talent, and a lot of talent that I don't think many other people were high on. And Thielen has been really a player that I remember when he first started to come on, it was like, oh, this is cute. I mean, he's making some plays. He's stepping up. And then the more he does it, the more you're kind of like, geez, this guy's a player.
He's impressive.
And last year's game against the Packers was really his coming out party. And you see exactly, he has that rapport with Bradford. He definitely has it with Keenum, I think, with some of the things that he's done in the interim time period for the Vikings offense. So I really do put it goes back, it isn't just Thielen, it's also defending the middle of the field, being able to, you know, be sturdy there and make offenses pay, because that is the cushion for every NFL defense, is that middle of the field. So winning that battle is a big part of it, and Thielen is a big weapon that the Vikings have in trying to help them their side, you know, prevail.
Yeah, I'm with you on the middle of the field thing, and that's why I have a hard time deciding whether the first target goes on Thielen or goes on Rudolph. And I say that because I know Stephon Diggs had a huge game at US Bank Stadium last year in week two against the Packers, but he's been slowed by a groin injury. He couldn't really make it through the Bears game on Monday night. You really question whether he's going to be full strength, if he's going to be the same Stephon Diggs that we saw a year ago in Minneapolis. So that being said, for me, you know, I put if Thielen is job one, then Rudolph to me is job 1A, because you look at how the Packers defense performed last week against Dallas. I really thought things started to turn in a positive direction for Green Bay's defense when they started to clamp down a little bit more on Jason Witten.
Yeah.
When Dak Prescott didn't have that automatic safety valve for that 7 or 8 yard pass, you know, sitting, you know, in the short zone area, when the Packers started to clamp down and squeeze that and take that away, I thought Dallas's offense started to have a little bit more difficulty. And so from that standpoint, looking at how the Packers defense played last week, I don't want to see Kyle Rudolph get off to the start that Jason Witten did down in Dallas.
Yeah, and you know, Rudolph too is somebody that I think has kind of quietly taken the league by storm. You know, for the first four seasons of his NFL career, he was pretty much steady as it goes. you know, a good option there for Bradford or Teddy Bridgewater, whoever was in the backfield, running the quarterback position, even going back to Christian Ponder. Now, the thing that's interesting is last year he really did come on. I mean, 83 catches, 840 yards, seven touchdowns. I don't think people realize how dynamic he was in that offense a year ago. And you see that carrying over this season. I think that's the maturation of a player still only 27 years old, really learning the position and knowing what's expected of him in Pat Shurmur's offense. Now, the question for the Packers is going to be, how do you defend those middle-of-the-field weapons?
Right.
You know, we have to see exactly what Morgan Burnett's role is going to be, if any, in this game, dealing with that hamstring injury and not practicing on Wednesday and Thursday.
Sure.
That means potentially more Josh Jones. Could mean more Demaryius Randall, Quentin Rollins, how they use those safeties. A lot of domino effects there with Morgan Burnett if he isn't able to play in this game. They've tested that actually a little bit with playing him out of position at slot cornerback and deep safety.
Yep.
But if he's not there for an entire game, defending Rudolph, defending Thielen in the middle of the field is going to be a big challenge for Green Bay.
I would agree with you there. And looking at Minnesota's running game, I asked you kind of what you thought the outlook was for the Packers running game in the last segment. This Minnesota running game now, there's no Dalvin Cook. Mm-hmm. You've got Latavius Murray, the veteran free agent that was brought in. Jerick McKinnon, younger guy, more of a shifty scat back type who really kind of took over the second half of that Monday night game in Chicago. What are you expecting? What are you looking to see here from this Vikings running game? How are they going to go about this?
It's very interesting because Murray's been off to a slow start. And obviously, I go back to a couple of years in Oakland. I mean, he was a every down bell cow type back.
He was a Pro Bowler in 2015, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he showed that he could handle those kind of roles. Now, the thing that's interesting is the guy he's, I guess you could say, competing for time with Jerick McKinnon, a former second-round pick, was originally kind of seen as maybe the guy of the future for them behind, you know, Adrian Peterson and Matt Asiata, and could potentially be that guy. And he never really quite grabbed that brass ring. Well, now Murray is here. You had Dalvin Cook. He sort of gets forgotten about a little bit, and then he ends up stepping up big in that game a week ago. So McKinnon's the one I really have an eye on because I think there's a lot more unknowns with him. As you said, he's shiftier. He's a little more dynamic and, you know, potentially could give you some problems. He certainly did, you know, in that last game against the Bears.
Yeah, I have a similar take as you do on McKinnon in that I see this as a young guy who maybe didn't quite seize the opportunity he was given the first time around when he was thrust into the spotlight. And the way he stepped up in that Bears game on Monday night, I sensed a young guy saying, I'm getting a second chance here. You know, they drafted Dalvin Cook high. They brought in Latavius Murray. But right now, they've thrown me back into the spotlight, and I have to respond, and I have to prove what I can do and that I belong as a potential, you know, number one running back in this league. And players like that, with that sort of motivation, when they start to taste success, they can become awfully dangerous.
Absolutely. And keep in mind, too, fourth NFL season, but still only 25 years old. A pretty bright future for him if he can grab it.
Yeah, no doubt. With that, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. Wes, Martellus Bennett held court, I guess you'd say, at his locker, as he's known to do. He did that on Thursday after practice. And you were there, kind of a part of that conversation. You posted a story on Packers.com on our website. As usual, Marty B. talking in metaphors and analogies and whatnot. And he talked about learning this offense, getting assimilated into this offense with the Packers, like a fast break offense in basketball, like the Golden State Warriors and whatnot. I thought it was just an interesting description, and you described it as well in the story. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, Martellus Bennett, first off, is, I mean, as good as he is on the field, the guy is a master of metaphors. It's incredible. hearing him talk over the course of the season, I'm sure any place that has had him as a beat writers have come to learn that. But he did. He looked at this scramble drill and what Aaron Rodgers does in extended plays. It's a lot like fast break opportunities. And the similarity he drew to the NBA or just, you know, basketball is how you really need to tailor how you play to who your point guard is. So if you're with the Warriors, you know, you're trying to get to the three-point line with Steph Curry. You know, if you're Chris Paul, you're working with him, you're trying to go more towards the rim for an alley-oop to be ready. Knowing what your point guard is expecting and how to best put yourself in a situation to really be dynamic.
Yeah.
And that's been the learning curve for him. And as a lot of the assistant coaches had talked about on Thursday, there really isn't any way to simulate that until you're actually in a game with Aaron Rodgers.
Yep.
You can go through that in practice, and you can run, you know, extended plays after a false start or an offsides penalty, or maybe someone coming off the field a little late than usual. But to really get a feel for what's expected of you, you need to be able to do it in real time. And now Bennett, who's played over 80% of the offensive snaps this year, has had an opportunity to start to learn that a little bit more. In the 33-yard catch he got against the Cowboys goes back to being a product of that and understanding where Rodgers expects him to be.
Yeah, and you and I have gotten a lot of questions in our insider inbox over the course of this first month and a half of the season, with people, you know, really questioning, when is Martellus Bennett going to look like, you know, the Martellus Bennett that was advertised as this big free agent acquisition and everything? He's not making the explosive plays. He's not catching the touchdown passes and everything. And I think you and I have both been of the same mindset here, where it's like, just be patient, you know, just wait. Because this isn't this Green Bay Packers offense, and especially with a guy like Aaron Rodgers and his experience and his mind and everything and the way he runs it, you can't just plug somebody in right at one of these perimeter positions. And, you know, no matter how veteran a presence the guy is, and Martellus Bennett has played for a lot of teams, he's been in this league for a long time, it takes some time. And I think the Cowboys game, you know, we saw the explosive gain, the great catch he made on the extended play with Rodgers. I think that now he's just getting started. And yeah, you'd love for it to start that way right away in week one, but that's just not realistic.
Yeah.
So you let it evolve, you let it develop, and now let's see where it goes.
And what's fascinating, if you actually go back and look at that play, it's the second offensive play the Packers had in the second half.
Yeah.
You can actually almost see the light bulb go on when you're looking at Bennett, because his original route, it's an empty formation. He's lined up in the slot, and he just does this quick little out to the flat, probably about 2 or 3 yards. And then as he sees Rodgers rolling his direction, you can actually see him be like, okay, I got to go upfield now. And
yeah,
he said he actually thought about doing something else that they're taught, but realized that Rodgers was probably going to be looking downfield. And as it turns out, he was able to sneak in a beautiful pass, arguably the best one of that game in terms
yeah
of the difficulty.
Yeah, you may be right.
To Bennett, and obviously complete the play. These Packers, I mean, it's been something trying to get him and Lance Kendricks involved in this offense and get them up to speed on everything after really having a bunch of homegrown guys for a number of years. Even you saw that with Jared Cook a little bit last year.
Yeah.
But as he gets more comfortable, he's going to be even more dynamic in that fast break, as he calls it.
Yeah, I think so as well. But before we go to our break, Wes, let's take care of a little sponsor business. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Subs' Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, before we go, let's take a look at what's going on in the NFL in Week 6. We already have a significant result as far as the NFC goes. On Thursday Night Football, the Philadelphia Eagles go down to Charlotte, North Carolina, knock off the Carolina Panthers, which improves the Eagles to 5-1. They are now on top of the NFC. The Carolina Panthers fall to 4-2. Carolina suddenly tough to figure out with having lost at home to New Orleans and to Philadelphia, but they have road wins over New England and Detroit.
Yeah.
So hard to say exactly where Carolina is headed, but boy, Philadelphia 5-1, Carson Wentz in his second year looking like he's got the Eagles definitely on the right track.
Well, and even more than that, he's making the brass with the Eagles look really smart for going in there and getting him. I'm really impressed by him. And I was watching that game last night, and to see him already with the captain C on his chest and the way he commands that huddle, you got to remember, I mean, this is a guy that was playing FCS football, and not to take anything away from his school with North Dakota State, but we talk so often about guys playing in big time venues in college. He didn't really get that. So now you look at it and he's playing in these 80,000, 90,000 seat venues, and how he's stepping up just really impresses me again. And he just seems to, they've built that team well around him. He has a great quarterback mind in Doug Peterson. Carolina's still up and down, and their go as Cam Newton goes, and it's been a roller coaster for them this season. But I was really impressed with Philadelphia.
Yeah, well, now as we head into Sunday, the Packers will try to get to 5-1 and match the Philadelphia Eagles with that record atop the NFC. The other team in the NFC with just one loss is the Atlanta Falcons, although they've had their bye week now. So in terms of total games, they are one game behind. Another contest I think that Packers fans will have their eye on, Detroit travels down to New Orleans. And early in the season, New Orleans week one, that Monday night game against Minnesota, you thought, okay, the Drew Brees era is over, you know. But you can never write off a team that quickly, and New Orleans looks like they could be awfully dangerous. They come to Lambeau Field next week. They have an NFC North opponent in the Superdome down in Louisiana this weekend with Detroit, and Detroit now trying to keep pace with Green Bay.
Yeah, and speaking of roller coasters, the New Orleans Saints, we're trying to figure them out with their defense and everything. Drew Brees is the maestro, and they're always going to have a chance in any given week with him at quarterback. Detroit has a lot of things to figure out. We talked about Haloti Ngata, you know, being out for the season now, trying to figure out what they're going to be defensively. I mean, that was their answer to losing to Ndamukong Suh. So trying to see what form that defense takes is going to be a big thing there. And also, you know, Alvin Kamara, you and I talked about him during the offseason. He looks like he's going to be a stud here for the Saints. So a lot of intriguing factors to that game, and certainly some big NFC complications? I don't know.
Whatever the word
But whatever the case may be, it's going to be a big contest.
Yeah, when you look at possibly two ends of the spectrum here with the NFC North, if the Packers win and the Lions lose, the Packers have a two-game lead on the entire NFC North. If the Packers lose to the Vikings and the Lions win down in New Orleans, it's a three-way tie at the end of Week 6. So with that, we're going to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.